The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
John Gibbons, it is for our weekly environment spot. And John, I'm confused by the notes in front of me because I was listening to Ben in the 5 of 5 tell us about how cold-related deaths are likely to increase significantly in Ireland over the coming decades. And yet in front of me is a note that says heat-related deaths are going to increase significantly. So which one is it, John?
Good evening, Matt. Yeah, this report is blowing a little hot and cold, I'll put it that way.
Boom, boom.
Yeah, it's a study that was published by The Lancet, which is, you know, very reputable journal. But there's a certain amount, Matt, of straws in the wind here with this type of, it's less of a study and more of a long-term projection. And I'm personally very, I take with a large grain of salt projections towards the tail end of this century. There are so many variables. But anyway, to your question. Right. The survey covers across Europe, and obviously the focus that we're going to talk about is Ireland. So what they're saying, first of all, is that we've got about just under 4,000 what they call cold-related deaths a year in Ireland. So that are basically people who die prematurely as a result of cold conditions. Now, first of all, we're a fairly cold country, so that's not to be completely unexpected, number one. Heat-related deaths in Ireland are extremely rare. They reckon at the moment about 30 a year. They do expect that to rise pretty dramatically, but they're saying, say, 560 by 2100. Now, they might as well have said, you know, 5,600.
And what's the population of the country going to be? There are projections that, for example, we'll have 1.8 million additional people within 35 years. We'll have a population in the Republic alone of 7 million people.
Yeah, and also,
are they taking that into account?
Indeed, and on that as well, Matt. For example, a single episode, and this happened in 2003, a heat wave across Europe, more than 70,000 people died as a direct result of that heat wave in Europe in 2003. So we've improved our heatwave preparation in Europe since then. But the point is, you can do these sort of long-term projections and then one big event comes along and bang. I'll give you an example. In Ireland, we reckon the hottest it's ever achieved in Ireland is probably around about 33 degrees centigrade. There was supposedly a single reading back in the late 1800s in Kilkenny, but that's very much in doubt. In all likelihood, 33 is the ceiling. We know, for example, 2 years ago, we breached 40 degrees centigrade in southern England. So we know there's a possibility in the coming decade, say, of breaching, say, 35 degrees in Ireland, maybe moving on to 40. And we also know, because of the quality or lack of quality of our housing stock, that people will die as a result of those high temperatures. Now, heat waves are very insidious killers. What you often find is, it isn't like, for example, a tornado that comes in and flattens buildings and people are crushed to death. With heat waves, essentially, it's the epidemiologists who figure out the death rate. What they basically work out is, in the weeks and months after a heat wave, they can calculate the number of excess deaths. And heat waves, as I say, they're a silent killer.
People's bodies aren't able to cope.
Precisely. And we have a remarkably narrow range of vulnerability. For example, when it gets cold, we're good at dealing with cold. We sort of wrap up for the cold. But your body's upper tolerance for heat is quite limited. And especially in stock in Ireland, where we've almost no air conditioning. And for example, as somebody who goes regularly to France, what I've discovered is that the French are in a panic because most French accommodation has no air conditioning either. But France is heating up so quickly that they now, in order to deal with the tourists, they're having to install it.
Tell us about the Mediterranean heating up and how that has been linked to the deaths of 6 people on a luxury yacht off the coast of Sicily earlier this week.
That's right. This relates to the entrepreneur Mike Lynch and his entourage who sadly went down in their super yacht in the Mediterranean. Now, essentially, what we know for sure is that sea temperatures in the Mediterranean have reached and breached 30 degrees centigrade. These are seawater temperatures. And essentially, the best way I can describe hot seawater like that is basically it's rocket fuel. What that does, and we see it, for example, in the Gulf of Mexico, the Caribbean, the reason why that is Tornado Alley is because of the really high sea surface temperatures. Essentially, a moving storm system sucks up heat energy from the sea surface, and that is the fuel that fires them forward. So the scientists who've looked at this, including the president of the Italian Meteorological Society, what they basically gave a very good analogy. He said, look, we've always had storms. He said 30 years ago, this type of event might have created winds of 100 kilometres an hour. He said, but this one breached 150 kilometres an hour. So essentially what we're looking at again, Matt, we've spoken about this many times. This is, if you like, weather on steroids. the superheating of the Mediterranean Sea is driving more severe storm systems. We had an incident, for example, last year where four people were killed in a violent storm. And these are coming at us in most unexpected ways.
Isn't it great? You mentioned there are academic experts. Isn't it great, though, that Irish business is now funding research at our major universities like Trinity College? New chair of climate science, been funded by CRH, which is Ireland's biggest company, got a valuation of over $60 billion in the US stock market, even though it's headquartered here in Dublin. And Ryanair, which, of course, is worth over 20 billion euro, is also funding research into impacts of aviation and climate change. Is that not something to be celebrated?
I suppose so, Matt. I think we need to start probably getting our professors in some of these departments to wear jackets like the, you know, like the motor racing guys, where they wear the logos of their sponsors on their jackets so that people can see, oh, well, that's who you're working for. Now, I'm afraid I know you possibly have a little tongue-in-cheek here, but here we have Ireland's...
Maybe I mean it.
Maybe you do. Here we have Ireland's oldest university, over 400 years old, going around cap in hand to two of the three largest carbon polluters in Ireland. Now, I will also say, Matt, that Trinity makes a huge play about its commitment to sustainability and planting trees and stuff like this. They're really big into it. And just again, for the record, and I don't want to seem like I'm picking on CRH, but I'm picking on CRH, their annual emissions in their 2023, according to their annual report, 44.1 million tonnes. Now, they're a big company, Matt. But, as we've discussed before on this programme, cement and concrete manufacturing is one of the most intense industries in the world. There are low-carbon routes, but I can assure you these are routes that are not being pursued by CRH.
But sorry, is that not what CRH is doing by funding the research, that it's looking for ways to reduce its own emissions?
No, I mean, the so-called CRH Chair of Climate Science, which, I'm sorry, takes us to the very edge of parody here, almost as funny as the Ryanair Sustainable Aviation Research Centre, an organisation headed by a climate curmudgeon, and I say it politely, a curmudgeon, someone who has mocked and ridiculed climate science for the last 20 years, and now he's putting a few bob in to academia.
It's conversion.
Yeah, conversion. Indeed it is. And of course.
But hold on, see, hang on a second. So there's a couple of issues here, and we won't get into aviation again tonight because we've done that a number of occasions, but my God, we need concrete. We need concrete for building all sorts of things that are an absolute necessity, from roads to houses to office blocks. Where would we be without concrete, John?
I agree with you, Matt. Of course we do. But as we have discussed very recently in this very studio, there are ways, low carbon methods of producing concrete, but companies like CRH are dragging their feet on them. You know why? Because they're not working to save the planet. They're working to shovel money into their shareholders' pockets, because you know what? That's what large corporations do.
Hold on. It's very expensive to build houses and apartment blocks and commercial office blocks. And if you go the allegedly more or less carbon intensive route, aren't you going to be pushing the prices up to end users enormously?
Well, of course, that depends on the models that you use for it. It also, for example, you should be using other types of materials, like we should probably be using wood in construction far more than we are. And we should also obviously be using low carbon concrete. And of course, Matt, we should be looking at refurbishment of derelict buildings before we start slamming up new ones. Yes, we've got to build new things, but we have to do it in a low-carbon way. You see, these are just not optional. And I guess the concern for me and for many other people looking at this is that, for example, CRH, in its sustainability report, is promising to be, would you believe, net zero by 2050. So in other words, the board of CRH is committing that long after they've all retired and taken their money, that at some distant future point when it won't be their problem, then they'll be carbon neutral. Now, if you ask them, well, what's your plan for 2025, 2026, 2030? Oh, no, well, you don't want to talk about that.
Rome wasn't built in a day, John.
Oh,
you
no.
Can't suddenly go carbon neutral immediately.
No, you can't. But the trick really about any journey, Matt, is don't ask somebody where they're going to be in a year's time. Ask them where they're going to be tomorrow. Where they're going to be next week. And the issue with these companies is they are brilliant at greenwashing. And in the case of this, like the CRH Chair of Climate, I hand it to them. I mean, I just wonder, is there anything that Trinity won't take money for? I mean, earlier this year, for example, in the face of...
But hold on, isn't Trinity have major problems? Like all third level institutions are saying, they're not getting enough money from the government. They have to get money somewhere. If it's going to be through commercial sponsorships, take the money and then astound the donors with their ingratitude. Come up with the research which shows that these are the very companies which are causing the issues and problems.
Well, I think you know, and I know very well, that that's not how sponsorship works. Sponsorship is get out of that. Sponsorship is an insidious thing, because essentially what it does is everybody knows who's putting the butter on their spuds. Everybody knows. You don't have to tell them. You don't have to order them. They internalize it, Matt. And I think Trinity here, as I said, they only recently backed down over investments in Israeli companies involved in illegal settlements, and their own students embarrassed them into withdrawing from that. I think, Trinity, this is an ugly hat trick for Trinity.
John Givens, thank you.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.